So here we are, the last session, 72 sessions. That's how many sessions we've had. So it's pretty amazing that we've come to the end of all that. Let's see if I can adjust this so that it's easier to see me. Okay, I'm trying to do it this way. Kathleen sent a private chat here saying, what's next? And I was going to talk about that at the end, but let me talk about it at the beginning since you raised the question, Kathleen. I don't want to make a firm commitment, but I have a pretty clear idea of what I want to do. Just don't completely hold me to it, because things change. I don't want to leap into advanced TSK, you know, another two-year program. I don't want to leap into a two-year program. I think we need to give this a chance to settle. I think people need to be exploring, and this is really very important. People need to be exploring how to continue on their own. You know, the program is certainly a support. I of course I understand and appreciate that, but you also have to find ways to do it on your own. I'm going to try to adjust this blind behind me to see if there's a little less light. Let's see. So I'll be gone for a moment. Is that better? No, because actually, it's this blind that's the problem, and this one's broken, so can't do anything about that, except maybe try to move it. Well, that doesn't help. Okay, let's not get caught up in technicalities. We have a lot of things to talk about today. It's not as though, we... you know, like, oh, I've got to squeeze in everything today that we didn't talk about in the last 71 sessions. TSK isn't like that, you know. It's not cumulative. It's not additive. There's a whole orientation. I mean, it's one way to talk about it, which is consistent with the way we have been talking about it for quite a while now. I'm trying to create a little better light. Is to say that it's a vision, you know. We want to learn to see differently. It's not as though that's all or nothing. It's not, you know, either we're seeing the ordinary way or we're seeing in the TSK way. But there's a TSK way of seeing which grows and deepens that's something for everybody to explore on your own. So over the next few months, at least, and till the end of the year, I'm not going to do anything with TSK in terms of an online program. What I'm thinking is that in the winter, probably not, we'll have to think about that, maybe January, maybe February, I want to start a program. I won't say too much about it right now because I'll have to think it through, and I also don't even know, I don't know how long it would be. It wouldn't be 72 sessions. It might be 10 or 16 or 18, who knows. I really won't say much about it. It'll be different. And the main difference that I'm imagining is that we will not, it will not be quite as much based on a close reading of the texts, although, you know, that's how I like to approach TSK, and that's what I've tried to share with you, and that's what I hope you'll continue to do on your own. But there are other ways, and maybe we can find a way to bring practice into it a little, even in the online sessions, bring practice in a little more. So that's what I'm thinking, say January or February. So you'll probably hear something from me or through Kathleen, I don't know, maybe in December. So I'm assuming that everybody who's been so faithfully attending these Sunday sessions can make this time slot work, so we will probably continue with this time slot. And exactly what we do, I'm going to work up. I'm certainly not going to turn away from TSK in that time, but like you, I'll be continuing to explore it in different ways. Okay, so let's take the time we have. I'm thinking that we probably won't do any practice during the phone call today, just because, oh, I don't know, let's just say just because. But I will point out some places where it would be possible to practice. Well, let me say something about that, too, in a kind of preliminary way. I think that one of the realizations that we have probably all come across in the course of this two-year program is that although the practices in the TSK book, the exercises, are really wonderful and helpful, and I think the people who were on the retreat had a chance especially to be aware of that, to notice that when you do it in a kind of sustained way. It's also true that if you pick up any one of the TSK books and you pick up, you open it to any page and you start to read, almost always there is something there that you could use as an exercise or a practice or a way of exploring, let's say experientially, a way of exploring what the TSK vision is, or a way of activating the vision. And I hope you continue to do that. So I'll be pointing out some places today as we go through this last reading where one could practice. But, it's a little bit arbitrary. You could pick any place, I think, just about, and find something that is worth exploring. That's one of the things that makes the TSK books so special. They are not an attempt to lay out a theory. They are an ongoing exploration in activating a vision. And so you can approach them that way and work with them that way. Okay. I see a note here from David saying, in terms of what we would do in the future, a continued guided approach to further exploration of the vision. Well, when we start up, there will be a little break now, but when we start up, yes, it will be further exploration of the vision. The TSK vision is for exploring, isn't it? Those two books, those two last two books in the Perspective series, a new kind of knowledge and a new way of being. They have these subtitles, and I don't remember them right now, but they use all these words that are about exploration, excavation, and so on. We're always sort of digging in, going deeper, exploring, discovering. That's what TSK is about. Okay, well, as we get into this today, I'm thinking, we could just devote our time to the question of how we will go forward. But I did think it'd be useful to go through the reading. So let's start with that. Maybe I'll try to shorten that a little bit if people have questions. Or let me put it this way. If you have questions or if you're thinking about how to go forward and questions arise or you'd like to explore that, go ahead and lay out your questions and type them in, and if we get if there seem to be a few, then I'll make sure that we leave enough time to talk about that toward the end. But for now, let me go a little further here because I think this final reading is helpful. It's we have three readings from Dynamics, and one is about space, one is about time, and one is about knowledge. So they're, they give us the opportunity to look in a new way, activate the vision in a new way. So let's see how that goes. Okay, however, before I get into the reading, I actually want to go back for a moment, and this does have to do with the question of going forward, you know, now that the course is over, what happens now? It's from last week. We talked about it briefly last week, so it's from the TSK reading from last week. But I want to take it a little further. You remember that discussion in the final chapter of Time, Space, and Knowledge. You remember the discussion where Rinpoche is talking about, he's talking about being, and he says that being is not some thing, not some substance, not some hidden ultimate. And then he says, you know, there have been so many ways of thinking, so many doctrines, religions, metaphysical systems, those are the words he uses, that talk in terms of some ultimate. And he asks, you know, what do we make of that? What can we make of that? And he points out that in our times, in our culture, there's been a very strong tendency to question every ultimate. And he talks about how that comes up in atheism, in skepticism, physical science. I'm looking at page 295 now, if anybody has the TSK book handy. Atheism, skepticism, physical science, philosophy of language, and psychology. You could add, perhaps, something that wasn't really on the table very much when this book was written, postmodernism, generally. But they're all kind of based on the same notion that anytime you evoke the possibility of some ultimate, some transcendent, you can question it and say, oh, this is, you know, this is just a question of language, this is just a question of belief, this is just a question that can be reduced or to you know, physical realities and so on. So we have this claim that there's an ultimate, and then we have all these ways of questioning it, which are very characteristic of our time, of the culture we live in. And he says that all of these critiques have a certain validity, a conventional validity, is what he's saying, is what he says. But then he distinguishes TSK from that. And I wanted to really emphasize or spend a couple of minutes looking at that. He says, okay, all of these different critiques of ultimates are saying that those ultimates are ungrounded. That's the word he uses. They're ungrounded and they can lead to confusion. In a sense, TSK says the same thing. He says all these... There is no ultimate in that sense, maybe that's not the best way to say it. TSK is not pointing towards some ultimate. It's not trying to create any new ultimate. But it is also, and this is the difference from these other critiques, it's also not throwing out claims for the ultimate. You know, what he says here, he says terms such as being or God don't have to remain ungrounded. He says the problem is we try to understand them in first-level terms, and then the critique arises in first-level terms, and they don't work on that level. You have to be able to go into a second or third level understanding, which doesn't mean that you throw out the ordinary. You know, these are all things, I mean, you could say all this just as well as I could, I think. But the point is that if you want to ground this approach or various approaches to a more meaningful way of life, let's say, you have to be able to do it without insisting on the ultimate truth of whatever it is you're pointing at. And the reason that I wanted to bring this out now is because I think the question arises very naturally as we come to the end of the program. Do I just let go of... let me give a practical example. So, you know, most of you, many of you, came to TSK because you had already become familiar with the writings of Tartong Tulku, and you were interested in Buddhism, you probably had a meditation practice. So do you throw all that out because that's pointing towards some ultimate, and it's not grounded? And what the TSK book here is saying is, no, you don't have to throw all that out. You just have to understand that there, any ultimate that you name doesn't have its own substance. You no longer, in the TSK vision, you no longer make claims about the way things are. And here he's talking about being. And he says, you can't think of being as something that's beyond all the things that are. You know, there's the beings, and then there's their being. But that's not some ultimate. That's not something else. So the reason this is important, it seems to me, is that ordinarily we have our very ordinary way of being. You know, just here I am, I have my story. I mean, not putting it the TSK way, but just in a very ordinary way. Here I am, I have my life, I want to be happy, I'd like to avoid being unhappy, I want for the people around me to be happy, and I want to do something meaningful. And so we work out this kind of ordinary reality. And if you think that that means that you can't go beyond that ordinary level to something that's transcendent, that would be a mistake. Because it's not that you critique everything that claims to be transcendent, like God or like, you know, the Buddha or the Bodhisattva path, something like that. It's not that you throw all that out. You simply recognize that it's not grounded in the way we think things have to be grounded in the first person sense. But neither is ordinary reality. Neither is my sense of self. Neither is my claim to have things that I care about and things that I like and don't like, and you know, the whole structure of our ordinary reality is also ungrounded. So you can't just say, I'll stay on that ordinary level and I'll ignore all of these levels that claim to be more meaningful or claim to be transcendent. Everything is on the same level. And given that that's the case, then it's very important to be able to explore the possibility of accessing dimensions of being that are, you know, what you'd normally say have to do with the transcendent realm or something beyond being. You want to be able to access those, but you want to be able to ground them in their own insubstantiality. And when you do that, and this is the point that Rinpoche makes at the end of this little section we're looking at, he says on page 296, just above the break, our usual inability to ground religious terms and our inability to account for the fundamental significance of our ordinary reality are closely related. And they both are based on a failure to understand the nature of what it means to be grounded, and how being grounded doesn't mean insisting on substance. Right? And he says, once we've opened to great knowledge, if we wish to express what's encountered as being or God or reality or oneness, then such terms are satisfactorily grounded and are profoundly significant. So it's very interesting. Somebody many years ago, I asked a student who's been a part of the Nyingma community longer than I have, what, you know, if they had studied TSK and what impact that had. And they said, yeah, it had a profound impact because I had to give up my commitment to the Dharma, let's say, to Buddhist teachings. But then I got it back. I don't know if they said this, but this is what I'm going to say right now. They said, you know, once I'd given it up, then it was available. And I think that's what Rinpoche is saying here too. So the reason I bring this up is, as you go forward, as you try to apply TSK, or no, that's not a good way to say it, as you try to activate the TSK vision, don't... don't confine that or don't leave out of account the possibility for more expansive ways of connecting to your own being. Okay, so I thought, you know, that might be valuable to point out or spend a little more time on. Another way of saying that, and it also comes up in this same reading from TSK, is that you, if you want to do that, you have to be able, in a certain sense, also to let go, or you might say, as Rinpoche says here, to discover a more fundamental significance in our ordinary reality. Right? And to do that, he says this right after the break on page 296, he says, the search for being is not one which can be based on egoistic purposes and values. Right? We can't stay with the commitment to the self, because that too is a commitment to a particular claim to substance. So Ron says here, clinging to views, even the Dharma, can be an obstacle to complete freedom. Yeah, that's right. And so anything, you know, it's interesting because in one way you can talk about clinging to views, and absolutely, and that's a Buddhist way of talking about it. In another sense, and it's just as true, and in fact it's saying the same thing in different words, is clinging to the belief that something is ultimate. That is a view. But it's funny because, you know, we think of views as kind of, you know, here's how I see it, and then there's the reality. But the view is actually that there is a reality apart from what I see. Okay, let's not go too far in that direction. We've talked about that in many ways at different times. So now I want to turn to the readings that were assigned for today, these three different readings. Actually, I want to start with something that is even before those readings. I came across it because I was looking at the reference to, there's a reference on page 159 of the reading for today to the field communique. And I found that led me to go back to that. And you might like to look at that discussion of the field communique, which is, let's see, it's in chapter 3 of Dynamics. It wasn't assigned for this time. But there's a sentence that struck me on page 27 of Dynamics. He says, if we wish to taste these possibilities of freedom and knowledgeability and so on, if we wish to taste these possibilities for ourselves, we must learn how to restore appearance as appearance. Right? Appearance just is appearance with no substance. Right? We have to strip it, he says, of its claimed substantiality. And that is very related to what we were just looking at in the TSK book, and it's very fundamental to the whole TSK vision. You know? In the beginning of Dynamics, as you all know, in the foreword, there's this long list, it goes on for pages, about what TSK, what the TSK vision is not. And if, in a way, you could boil all that down to the point that TSK does not establish anything as substantial. It simply accepts, or restores, to use this language, it simply restores appearance as appearance. So, if you're talking about a more fundamental ground, like grounding, a term like being, or the Buddha or God, the ground is no ground. You know? The ground is a kind of a no substance view. So the reason that led me to the field communique, and there's just a brief reference to it in the reading we had. Let's jump to it. It's on page 159. Let's see here. Pretty sure it's on 150. Yeah, okay. It comes up in a discussion of ekgnosis, which we'll talk about too. So it's after the heading. It says, inward knowledge of time, we're in the time section, is also the inward knowing outward of ekgnosis. And then it defines ekgnosis, or the knowledge of ekgnosis. It says, knowledge not bound by the field communique. So if you go back and look at the discussion of the field communique in the earlier part of Dynamics, you'll see that the discussion goes in two different directions. One is, or we can think about the field communique as pointing in two different directions, let's say. In one direction, we inhabit this field, and the field is always communicating what's so within that field. And we are a receiver, receiving the signals that are being broadcast by the field communique. And if we accept those signals at kind of at face value, and we say, oh, I understand, that's the way things are, then we're bound to the field communique. We're bound by the field communique. The other possibility, of course, and in a sense TSK always points in these two directions, the other possibility is if we recognize the field communique as a communique. If we recognize, it's another way of saying really, if we recognize appearance as appearance with nothing more substantial to it, then we're not bound by the field communique. We arrive at you could say, a kind of an unbounded freedom, right? And that has to do with ekgnosis and free conducting. You know, he says at the bottom of page 159, the beginning of the last paragraph, with the availability of ekgnosis, we can trace the substance and certainty of conventional experience, and we can trace it in certain ways. And then he says, we don't have to take those at face value. We don't have to accept what's communicated as the way things are. Somebody is telling us the way things are. And that somebody is not some outside force, although maybe in some descriptions it would look like that. But it's more thinking and presuppositions and the presupposed, all of these things that TSK is always talking about, right? Somebody is telling us, or some message is constantly being communicated, and we have been trained to accept that message, the field communique, but we don't have to, right? That's the knowledge of ekgnosis. So let's go back. I jumped ahead to the second reading because that's where there's a reference to the field communique, and I found it very helpful. But let's go back to the first reading, which is more in the space section. This is a short reading, pages 38 to 41. And we're really just going to be exploring these different ways of taking a quick look at, let's say, these different ways of not being bound, not being committed, not accepting anything as substantial. So ekgnosis is introduced in that way. And I'm not going to really... we talked about ekgnosis back in February, so 8 months ago maybe, almost. I'm not going to try to really explore ekgnosis. It's an inward, outward knowing. Very, very interesting, helpful approach. But what he says about it here is that... when we know in this different way, in a kind of a TSK way, and for our purposes we can say a way that simply honors appearance as appearance without attempting to establish anything substantial. Okay? When we know that, then he says, about the middle of the page, on page 39, he says, external object and physical space, subjective knowledge and mind all come together like partners in a dance, merging in mutual recognition and agreement. What appears can equally be understood as a projection of mind into space or as a being reflected back from space into mind. And that two-way movement, that's the ekgnosis movement, you could say, right? He says, with that, there's no occupancy. However it takes form, whatever projection it supports, ekgnosis widely opens wisdom. So, That's just one of the countless formulations in TSK that all, in a sense, point in the same direction. There's nothing more substantial, right, than appearance. And agnosis is what allows us to become aware of that. And when we do, and also as a kind of a precondition for even beginning to move in that direction, we are no longer committed to a self and its way of being, because the whole claim of the self is that it's substantial, right? Is that it does exist, and it's a claim. You know, if the self can't prove its own substance, then its whole story falls apart. And I guess you could say that's true for the realm of reality that the self discovers, but fundamentally, there's this, the view of the self. We have to let go of that. And on page 40, he says something that might have reminded you as you read it of what we were talking about last week in the TSK reading, where he talks about compassion and love and the ability to really reach out beyond the self. Here it's just hinted at, but it's about five lines down on page 40. He says, when we open up to these possibilities, he says, my way and their way give way to a broader way. Communicating and understanding, we replace disagreement and positions with flexibility and fitness. And again, that opens up the possibility for a way of being that is not centered in the self. Ron writes, the self is a pathological liar. Yeah, that sounds a little too negative to my ear. I mean, I think that's accurate. You know, the self has to tell this story. The self is constantly racked by fear. You remember that passage in Love of Knowledge where Rinpoche says, the self lives in the world like an illegal alien. He doesn't quite say it that way, but pretty close. Like an illegal alien, always afraid that its papers are going to be revoked, you know, it's going to be called into question and told, no, you can't be here. The self is tremendously fearful. If that leads to a kind of pathological lying, okay, but I think we want to be kind of sympathetic, sympathetic to ourselves also. We are committed to telling a story that really has no foundation. Yeah, Ron says fundamental insecurity. That's right. And maybe that's what pathological liars are all about. That's getting a little too psychological for us to go into now. Okay. So there is a connection between this lack of commitment to substance and a deeper knowing that is mentioned, discussed at page 41. There's a broader knowing. You know, the last few lines of page 41, which is the end of the chapter, he says, agnosis moves without departing from its space origin. It allows us to know with a knowledge that is not ours, a knowledge that expands beyond restrictions and condenses into universal availability. And then he talks about a vision of the whole, inseparable from the perfect immediacy of the emerging instant. So, this would be a place where you could practice, if you wanted to come back to this discussion. This would be a place where you could say, well, what is it like? Let me experiment. To look with this kind of inward knowing outward, or is it outward knowing inward? I can't remember now. No, it doesn't matter, I guess, because it says here, knowing inwardly and outwardly in a single movement. So what would it be like to practice like that? That would be a possible practice, but we're not going to do it now. Okay, let's move on to the second reading, which we've already talked about some. And all of these readings, you know, they're they're all connected to knowledge, because after all, we're exploring knowledge, and you might even say great knowledge. He talks here, he starts off, as so often TSK does, by pointing to our usual way of knowing and the difficulties that it creates, right? And what he says is that we rely on a kind of knowledge which is limited and limiting. It's a specifying knowledge. That's about 8 lines down on page 157, right? It's a knowledge, and he describes it briefly, the mind forms impressions, it gives meanings, it marks out points, it designates dimensions. It conducts in a particular way. And you can tie that back into the mind, you know, what's communicated in the field communique. That's how we ordinarily proceed with this specifying knowledge. And of course, TSK knowledge is very different. It's a knowledge of the whole. It doesn't specify, it doesn't insist on substance, it stays open, which is a theme in the third reading. So one interesting element here is that Rinpoche ties that in to impermanence. So impermanence, you know, impermanence, very simple definition, is everything changes all the time, right? And Rinpoche says, conventional consciousness really can't be open to the inner dynamic of what he's talking about here is nuclear time. But knowledge of impermanence invites that inner dynamic. It invites it back. And then he goes on to say something really interesting and worth exploring. He says, our usual understanding of impermanence is rough and undeveloped. So that's a little surprising, I think, because it seems like impermanence is very straightforward, very easy, you could say, to understand. Everything changes, right? That's what impermanence means. And you could argue, does this change, does that change? And, you know, there are discussions like that. It's a big topic, of course, in Buddhism, the impermanence of all appearance. But what he's saying is that our the way we think of impermanence doesn't go very deep. It's very rough. It's very rough and undeveloped. And he invites us to focus more closely. I won't try to go into the details of that. But what he points out is that impermanence becomes a gateway into the recognition of insubstantiality. You see that experience, this is about 6 lines from the bottom of 157, you see that experience is its own compounded transition. We'd have to unpack that, and I'm not going to try to do that now. But the next sentence says, without undermining what appears, without undermining what appears, appearance is appearance. And substance is part of what appears. Substance is substance, but it's not substantial. Right? And you remember in the TSK reading last week, Rinpoche says at one point, you know, when you try to talk about this, it sounds very paradoxical. It sounds like we're contradicting ourselves all the time. But we're not. I hope that's clear. Without undermining what appears, reality exhibits its insubstantiality. Right? We can let go of our attachments, he says here, including the attachment to the rational, and the wish to reject or transcend the rational. We can let go of old forms, but we can also let go of the impulse to reject old forms. So, again, we move from substance to appearance, and to the insubstantiality of substance. So there's something very, it's very nicely put here on in the second full paragraph on 158. He says, knowledge is honored in its appearing without being reduced to something less than the unknown. So that's actually it's very surprising if you think about what he's saying there. He's saying the whole, you could say, is the unknown. And we keep trying to reduce the unknown to a specifying knowledge. We keep trying to find something specific to know. And in doing that, we reduce knowledge. And, you know, so the unknown is actually the grand field of all possibilities. Right? That's where we want to be able to take our stand, but of course that's not a very good way of saying it. So again, another way of talking about that is that we're looking at appearance rather than substance. We're looking at the unknown because the moment we specify the known, we've closed it down. We've made it less than the unknown. So Michael asks the question, he's going back to the previous section on page 41, can knowledge of the whole, in quotes, suggest that the whole is knowing more than being known? As on page 41, the whole can become knowledgeable, which seems to have a different flavor than the whole being known. Well, yes, certainly the knowing aspect is fundamental, and our ordinary knowledge, in this culture especially, completely leaves that out. It completely goes into the pole of the object, and we say, you know, knowledge is all about knowing what's out there, you could say. But in fact, and this is what ekgnosis is all about, is this knowing inward, outward, right? It's both at once. And I'll just leave it at that. It's both at once. Okay. So this would be another place to practice, is to really let whatever appears remain unknown. And you'd really have to think for a little bit about what that means. It doesn't mean that I see something, you know, I see the plant on the table, but I don't really know what it is. No, it's not like that. I do know what it is. Right? It's a plant. It's on the table. But it remains unknown in a deeper sense. It remains an expression of what has never been established, what is never specified. Its specification is there, but it doesn't do what it claims to do. There's a nice example of this, I think, at the very bottom of page 158, three lines from the bottom. So he's talking about how knowledge can know in a different way. I won't read it, but he says, you know, we're not pursuing any goal. It's like art or dance or music or drama. It's an emerging dynamic. And then he says, heading nowhere, rivers return to the ocean. Heading nowhere, rivers return to the ocean. And the next words are, the drama is acted out. So that's very interesting. Rivers return to the ocean, but they don't head anywhere. Can we keep both those possibilities in mind? And the reason I like this example is because it works perfectly well in a kind of simple way, you could say. Rivers flow downstream, and in the end, they end up in the ocean. Right? That's the way things are. And we can specify that, and we can say rivers flow to the ocean. But in fact, you know, in fact is not the best way to say it. There's another level at which you could say rivers aren't going anywhere. Rivers just flow. Rivers are just, you know, even the word river is a specification that we don't really need except to orient ourselves. And of course, it's very useful to be able to orient ourselves. But the water is just moving. You know? It's not going anywhere. It turns out that the river flows to the ocean. There is a whole structure. There is a whole pattern there. But it's not the truth of what's going on. That truth is more at the level of being unknown. Okay? And that's what Rinpoche means when he talks on page 159, or at least it's related to what Rinpoche says on 159, where where he says at the bottom of the page, the last paragraph, we can trace through ecnosis, he says, we can trace the substance and certainty of conventional experience. For example, the world as given through sense perception, or more specifically, the river flowing toward the ocean, right? We can trace that to the operation of certain temporal mechanisms, such as cause and effect, or the interaction between the mental and the physical. But we don't accept those at face value, as he says. We don't accept the structures. We don't accept the substance. We don't accept the reality. Right? And then he says, and this goes back to the rivers, at the top of page 160, he says, ultimately there's no going at all. We discover that time's transmission is not movement in this conventional sense. So that is taking the notion that rivers are going nowhere. That's taking it at a deeper level, or taking it to a deeper level. But it's still related. And I'm not going to try to go further with that. There's always so much to explore. And of course, your assignment at this point is to explore. To explore on your own. Klaus says something about the river. He says, the river appears out of the hole, the ocean through raindrops, and it disappears into the hole, the ocean, again. And that's nice. I hadn't thought of that, but it's true. Where does the river... The river's not going anywhere because because the river itself is going to, you could say, be recreated from the ocean. So the whole notion of movement depends on our taking a particular stand. We are on the bank of the river, we're watching it flow, and we're saying, oh, look, it's headed toward the ocean. That's one way of looking. And from another way of looking, it's all just part of this cycle that Klaus is pointing to. So that's another level that you can look at it, yes. Okay. So, we don't commit ourselves to the field communique. We don't commit ourselves to substance. We don't commit ourselves to the temporal mechanisms that Rinpoche talks about here, like cause and effect, or the distinction between the mind and the body. We don't commit ourselves to the truth of some ultimate or some transcendent order. Right? We don't even commit ourselves to our personal experience, because all of that grows out of the same problematic structures. Right? So that's why we can talk about the TSK vision as truly a different vision. We just don't see things the same way. And when we do see in the same way, because when I look, the plant is on the table and the river is flowing toward the ocean, we see that, but we understand that it's the outcome of a temporal order or the expression of the field communique. We're not bound by it. And that means that we're free. So let's look, in the couple of minutes we have left, at the last reading, which was the knowledge side, again from Dynamics. And here, Rinpoche talks about the... find it here. He's talking about the inwardness of knowledge. This is at the bottom of page 228. He doesn't mention ecnosis here, but that reference to inwardness kind of suggests the same thing. And he says the inwardness of knowledge encompasses, and I'm sorry, let me back up, but he says, let me go up a few more lines. So he's talking about the knowability of knowledge, the ability of knowledge to know, we could say. We have to discover knowledge as the carrier of perception, the illustrator, the architect. And that's how knowledge appears. And then he says the inwardness of knowledge encompasses the power of the open within what appears. Compounding appearance. Notice that word compounding comes up again. It was in the reading before that too. But here let's just focus on the power of the open. Again, that has to do with no substance. And again, that's a place where you could practice. Maybe it's saying the same thing. You know, not exactly the same thing, because no formulation is the same, and even the same words at different times mean different things. But you could say, well, this is another way of formulating it. But if you formulate it this way and you let yourself experience the power of the open, where does that lead you? What is it like to practice in that way? What is it like to make that an exercise in perception, to discover the power of the open within what appears? Right? And that leads Rinpoche to talk about the body of knowledge, which we've talked about before. It's this kind of, it's the whole, right? Which in the previous reading had to do with the unknown. It doesn't specify. Right? It's free. So if you look at the first full paragraph on 229, it's awareness that's free from the fixed momentum and established derivations that give rise to thoughts and images. So do we do away with thoughts and images? Well, no. But we do away, remember, with the gravity of thinking. That's not in this reading, but we've talked about it many times. You could say we do away from the move that we make that goes from thinking and images, thoughts and images, to established derivations. Or this goes back to the idea of a specified knowledge. If we commit ourselves to a specified knowledge, we're stuck, no matter what that knowledge specifies. But if we don't commit ourselves, a moment of illumination. No, I think that was.
I want to find out what's going on.
Okay.
No medicine.
Okay, somebody has some other concern. Okay, so we're talking about being free from specification, derivation, momentum, and Rinpoche says here, intrinsically luminous, there are no meanings to draw out, there are no explanations to rely on. I think that, you know, we all have a way, I mean, we've all come far enough in this path to really, I think, not have to say too much more about that, right? So another way that Rinpoche talks about that in this last reading, then, is in terms of the universal unique, and that's a term that shows up from time to time, certainly in Dynamics, not in the original book, I don't think, but it points toward what the original book is pointing towards when it talks about one point is all points, right? I think it's a lovely phrase, the universal unique, but I'll just leave you to contemplate that. But it certainly points us towards wholeness, and that's what Rinpoche says pretty much at the end of the reading, almost. He says on page 231, allowing, about 10 lines down, allowing without discrimination. So there's no specification, no discrimination, no derivation, right? Allowing without discrimination, knowledge liberates appearance into wholeness. And that knowledge is available in the truth of our own knowing. Now, I've said this before, but not for a while. People sometimes think that knowledge is too ordinary a word for what the TSK vision is pointing towards. Couldn't we talk about wisdom? Well, we could talk about a vision, which, because Rinpoche does, but it's important that the knowledge that we're talking about, the body of knowledge, the knowledge that is not limited, that doesn't specify, is the same as or available within our ordinary knowledge. Right? And that's what Rinpoche says here. He says in the second full paragraph, 231, the power of this knowledge is presently knowable, not as an object or a construct, or you might say as a theory or as an ultimate. It's presently knowable in the truth of our own knowing. In space into space, knowledge into knowledge, the gateway of time. Yeah. So it's nothing out of the ordinary, or literally, you know, extraordinary. It's in the ordinary when we let go of our commitment to the ordinary, to the truth of the ordinary. Okay. So one final kind of reflection on that, and then we'll stop. On page 232, toward the bottom, Rinpoche talks about that in relation to silence. Right? He says, in its vastness, the body of knowledge remains still and silent. But only the agitation of surface mind suggests that silence translates into inaccessibility. Within silence, the opening has already happened. So the reason I wanted to call attention to that is that one possible reaction to what's presented in the TSK vision is to say, well, that's just kind of mystical or romantic, or it's not real knowledge, it's not scientific knowledge, it's not philosophical knowledge, because it just ends up in silence, and silence doesn't give us any knowledge. But of course, Rinpoche is saying here, it's only because we're committed to the kind of knowing that depends on thinking and derivation and all of that, that we are unable to appreciate the knowledge within silence. So yes, in a sense, TSK is silent. It has nothing to say. But in another sense, it has all of us, these many books to express it in. Okay, so I'm going to give Karin the last word because she has the final comment here. She says, activating the vision is bringing more ease, brings more ease. Things loosen up, seeing much more, more beauty, feeling more gratitude. So that's very nice. You bring us back to the heartfelt quality of the vision. We've touched on that a little bit. You know, it is not some intellectual thing, which it would be if we were committed to thinking and derivation and explanation. It's the truth of our being. It's available. So I said I would give you the last word, so I really will. Seeing much more, more beauty, feeling more gratitude. So David says thank you, and I thank you all. I'm sure you recognize that TSK is an exploration, and my exploration, our exploration together, has been for me a process of learning. And you know, we could just start over. I mean, I've started over with TSK again and again and again. There are always more riches and depths. So find a way to explore. You don't have to do it systematically, but you could if you like. But explore the vision, and we will start up again, but not over the next few months. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you so much, Jack.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you so much, Jack.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care, Jack. Thank you.
Take care. Bye, everyone.